But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I'm not being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So we have a league final, like we mentioned, on Monday, Conor. And the good news is there's going to be 2,400 spectators are going to be allowed in Croke Park. So pretty much a full house who would be going to a Division 3 league final, Conor. Am I being very unfair here?
You're being very facetious there, Willie. In fairness, like, you know, we didn't know we had a league final until after the weekend. And now we're looking at, this is probably the biggest game and biggest GA crowd for a game for over a year, I'd say. So, like, you know, I think you've mentioned on the show that even some of the games in Ulster and stuff where, you know, there might be only 500 people at them, but it sounds like there's thousands. Do you know what I mean?
So yeah, the only problem with this is that's 2,400 in Croke Park. So, like, and they'll be very spread out. I think when they're in a small stand, they make a lot of noise, but they'll be massively spread out. I don't know, Conor. Like, I mean, I'll be accused of being negative here, but we're looking at the Euros. We're looking at the rest of Europe, who have the exact same vaccine rollout as us. And you're looking at 20, 40, 60,000 fans in stadiums. And we're supposed to be happy with 2,400 in an 80,000 seater stadium on Saturday.
Yeah, I was watching, was it Hungary against Portugal there in Budapest the other day? But like, Hungary has a full house.
Yeah.
And actually they're in terms of COVID, I think they're way behind or a lot higher cases than over here. So that's another matter. But yeah, it does seem a bit of an anticlimax. But I'm kind of looking at it from the other way, is that like, we've had no crowds for ages, for so long. So it's like, it's just, and like, even the couple of hundred seemed great up in Ulster and up in Northern Ireland there recently. So 2,400 is a bit of a bonus, even though, as you said, like, we'd often give out here about if there was 20,000 people at Croke Park, because it's so big,
yeah,
and so cavernous that you don't notice the noise. But listen, it's better than nothing.
Definitely. It's just like the crumbs that we're happy with. If we were to be told this 2 years ago, we'd be happy with 2,400 spectators in a league, in league final. You go, what are you talking about? What's it being played in Croke Park for? This is ridiculous. Play it down in Ockham or something, where 2,400 would be a decent crowd. Listen, we can say that's bad news or good news anyways, whichever side you come down. Everybody is going to come down on the same side as this. Terrible news. Killian O'Connor looks like he's gone for the season, if we're being honest. Like, I mean, it said, the report says he underwent a medical procedure this week on his Achilles tendon injury. So obviously he came off against Clare. And I have to give Killian O'Connor incredible credit. I don't know if this stuff is going on through his head, but we were guessing on Monday, Conor, what's wrong with this fella? He never put his hand to his Achilles. He never had the physio touch his Achilles. He walked off the field with his leg dead straight. Nobody knew what the injury was. Do you think this is going through his head? I don't want people knowing what it is, or I don't know. Like, I mean, it's incredible, an Achilles tendon injury, which is an incredibly sore injury, and nobody had an idea that that's what it was, you know, coming off. But like, I mean, what a loss to Mayo now.
Yeah, maybe could have gone through his head, Willie, as somebody who's suffered an awful lot of injuries. Do you know what I mean? Maybe he's kind of conscious of the fact of the perception it'll give, that if he, you know, if he's too much in pain, or if he's targeting a certain area or something like that. But it is the worst news that that Mayo could have got. I mean, if you would have picked one player for Mayo not to lose for the championship, it would have been Killian. And it's not just because he's our free taker. Obviously, he's just the leader of the attack. He's been in brilliant form. And I'd say last year, because I think he went from after the All-Ireland semi-final in 2019, he didn't play for Mayo for 14 months. Now, granted, that was because of COVID and stuff like that. But I'd say last year was the first time in a long time that you'd seen Killian play without some sort of niggling injury, because he's been carrying a lot of injuries for years as well. So this is just the most rotten of luck. And just as you were saying there, I'm not aware. I've never heard of a mild Achilles tendon injury. Do you know what I mean? Like, from anyone I've spoken to who has experienced them, they're the worst. They're incredibly sore and they're very hard to rehab. So listen, I'll wait till we get better news, you know, more clarification, if that clarification is going to come. But it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good, especially with a shortened season. It would be, it seems amazing at this point if we'd see Killian in a Mayo jersey before 2022, to be honest.
Yeah, especially when there's going to be surgery, there's some medical procedure, even if it's not hugely invasive, it's still, you're still going in at it. So like, I mean, I would be on your side thinking that that's, you know, him done for the championship. It's an incredible, remember the day they were hammered down in Killarney by Kerry, and he passed out to Gooch as the highest scorer ever in championship football. He scored 37 since then. Like, this fella's never going to get caught.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's great. And he only went 29 there last month as well. Like, he seems to have been around for the longest time, because I think he made his debut in 2011, but he hasn't even passed 30 yet. So, like, it's just maybe the way football has gone this year with the highest scorers, the likes of David Clifford might come close eventually. But like, he's not only he passed the Gooch, as you said, in 2019, but he's gone so far past anyone since then. Do you know what I mean? And like, Hopefully, after this injury clears up, that he still has a couple of years for Mayo left yet. And just the rate at which he scores, you know, including that score against Tipperary last year, makes it really hard to think that anyone's going to catch him. But it's just, like, I'll say this, Willie, because I'm biased, but I think people have come to take that for granted with Killian, that the scoring totals that he does rack up. And I think we're going to realise that in a big way come later on in the championship, and especially in the Connacht championship, that it's just not easy to make up what Killian contributes to the team. So no. It's as big a loss as I can think of, to be honest.
Yeah, we're going to look ahead to the championship in part two and maybe have a look through the provinces and give our predictions. So we'll see how Mayo are going to do against maybe a very defensive Galway now, which they don't like playing without potentially the two O'Connors. So we'll get to that in part two. Paul Mannion has been explaining his reasons for stepping away from Dublin. He said it's just the day-to-day, week-to-week commitment that you have to be at your best. And he said he pretty much put it down to the commitment. He said it's just pretty heavy, the commitment levels. Not that I wasn't enjoying it. People ask me, are you fed up or were you sick of it? That's not the case at all. It's the best thing I've ever been part of, or love being part of it. But we talk all the time about the commitment inter-county players give, and it really is a big commitment. And that's the thing, like, I mean, you can say I absolutely love that. It's absolutely fantastic. A lot of times you kind of something has to be one way or the other. Paul Mannion loved it, absolutely loved it, loved his time there. But the commitment levels are probably getting a little bit too much now, year on year, where he said, I wouldn't mind a year out of it. And plus, he hadn't been on the team, and he probably won't admit that. But like, I mean, the reality is, he said, it's not just the training hours, it's the travel time, it's the prep time, it's the meeting time, it's the making sure you get home to get your sleep in, eating the right food, recovering properly, doing your homework, reviewing the opposition on your own matches. It's a huge commitment when you add that all up. And like, you know, you're not starting last year, you're used to starting, you're thinking of all this commitment. I completely understand why he might want a year out of that.
Yeah, no, 100%. And like, but I am glad that he said, Willie, that like, it's the best thing he's been a part of, yeah, and that he loved being a part of it, because there's a danger to think that, like, you know, like, it is a lot of hours, but like, you have to play at the level that Paul Mannion has played at, you have to put in a lot of those hours. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I'm glad that he said that he enjoyed it, and like, he's going to enjoy it 1 year where he's playing, you know, where he's playing and he's flying it, you know, when he's in the Dublin team, when he's, you know, in all-star form, whatever. And he's probably looking forward to everything that comes with it, the recovery, the analysis, the homework on the opposition, all that sort of stuff. And that sort of stuff becomes a bit more draining if your form is gone, or if you're, you know, your place isn't secure or something like that, and you're wondering, you've done it for years already and thinking, Jesus, I could possibly do it again, but I just need a break. So like, that's perfectly understandable from Paul Mannion as well, like, you know. But I am glad that he did say that, he, you know, because there's a danger of thinking that, like, you know, that inter-county GAA is a slog. Well, there is a lot of time going into it, but people do enjoy it as well.
Well, that's the thing, and it's an incredible honour and all those kind of things. They're the best years of your life, but at the same time, they are very time consuming. Yeah. And, you know, for a lot of players, you might not get the reward. Obviously, Paul has got a huge reward out of it, and, you know, he's acknowledged that, because Gordon Kelly was talking in the Independent today, and he was saying, you know, because the commitment levels made the headlines, you know. So like, I've always said on this show, like, I mean, there's no right or wrong answer for commitment levels. Some players love it, some players find it challenging, other players dislike it and they'll do it for a few years. Like, there's nobody's right and nobody's wrong on this. It's whatever it is for that particular individual. Like, Mannion's only 28, Jack McCaffrey only 28. Incredible, really. And they're two of Dublin's flair players. And we might be talking to Brendan Devaney a little bit later in the show about Dublin's style of play now, and how, you know, they've gone very, very conservative and very, you know, mechanical, you know, and the flair has gone out of him. So it is a pity to see Jack McCaffrey and Mannion gone. But Gordon Kelly says bad news travels faster, and you often see the bad news would be out there saying that it's too much of a commitment and stuff like that. But if you talk to the players, they're going out there 4 or 5 nights a week and meeting up with good friends. They're playing football and having a bit of fun while living a healthy lifestyle. And like, I mean, that's all true. Like, there's a great camaraderie, there's a great friendship. There's the other side of it. You probably lose or drift away from friends that aren't in that bubble because they're not living the lifestyle you're living. It's an incredibly healthy lifestyle, which can be great. Like, maybe Paul Mannion will wake up maybe after Electric Picnic at the end of September with a hangover and go, Jesus, I'm going back in there. I'm not dealing with this stuff. Do you know what I mean? But like, I mean, there are things that you have to kind of balance off. Again, Gordon's right. But nobody's right and nobody's wrong in these conversations.
Yeah, but it got the headlines for good reasons as well, Woolly, in terms of like there was reports commissioned into this, and it showed that like the level of commitment that GA players, the intercounty players, had to put in was kind of potentially in some cases bordering on unsustainable. And you know, and like the danger, we've mentioned loads of times in the show that the GA tends to often be copycat, and if the crowd down the road are training for, you know, X nights a week or X hours a week, well, then we should be doing more, you know, and thinking that more means better when it doesn't. Do you know what I mean? But I think like that the balance that a lot of intercounty teams, I'd say, and it's good to hear again, Gordon Kelly says something like that, that they're enjoying it. So it's good to hear that kind of most intercounty teams, you know, seem to be getting the balance right now. But something you hinted at earlier, like for people to step away, maybe it's easier for, you know, the likes of Paul Mannion and Jack McCaffrey when they're, you know, in their late 20s, they've won All-Stars, they've won multiple All-Irelands, you know, they're maybe not thinking, like some people in other counties thinking, if I step away the 1 year, that might be the year where we have the greatest success and you'll regret it afterwards, whereas that might be an easier decision for Paul Mannion and Jack McCaffrey to make.
Yeah, exactly. So like I said, we have a national final to look forward to this Saturday. It's the Vision 3 final, and to help us to look ahead to this, Anton Sullivan joins us on the line now. How's it going, Anton?
Hi, Colm. How's things? How are you?
Not too bad. You must be looking forward to it. It's on television in Croke Park.
Yeah, really looking forward to it, Colm. It wasn't looking likely last weekend after Fermanagh game. We weren't sure if we were going to get to go ahead, but thankfully we got the nod Sunday morning. We got word that it was going ahead. So yeah, we're all looking forward to it. It's always great to represent your county in Croke Park, no matter what the occasion is. So really looking forward to playing Saturday evening.
So did you take a vote on the decision, or was this just John Mahan as the manager saying, look, we're going up to Croke Park? Or did you discuss it amongst yourselves? Because the decision was really in your hands, because Derry didn't have a game next weekend.
Yeah, well, obviously the focus was Saturday evening, and we just looked beyond that. We didn't know what was going to happen. We had to win the game first. So when we got the results, I think it was just down to John and his management team. He decided that it'd be good to play it, and we rode in behind him. So obviously, we're delighted to get a game in Croke Park. You know, for some of us, we haven't played there before. So listen, it's a great occasion. There's good buzz within the county. And listen, we would have been playing an A versus B game Sunday morning and train anyway. So yeah. I think it's worthwhile playing the game Saturday evening.
Well, that's the thing. We were making that point on the show on Monday that every team the week before a match will be playing a match anyways. Like, you know, so and the good thing it's Saturday and the next match is Sunday. So it's 8 days recovery, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it's 8 days. And as I said, we would have been training Sunday morning anyways. And people kind of said to me, would maybe you pick up injuries or whatnot. But listen, that can happen in training easy. So as I said, we're really looking forward to Saturday evening. I think going back 4 or 5 weeks ago, we played Clare the week before down in Ennis before we went down to Auckland for the first round of the league. So listen, lads want to be playing games every week. That's why you play football. So as I said, we're really looking forward to challenge ahead Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. What do you put your good form this year down to? Like the last 4 or 5 years, you've been struggling in the league.
I think it's just buy-in from all the players, Colm, to be honest. Lads really have bought into the whole setup in the last 18 months under John Mahan. It's been brilliant. Now obviously John, the COVID came and I probably put a bit of a dent in John. He would have liked to have got things done a bit quicker than expected, but when the new year came, we really knuckled down. We did a lot of work on our own, did a lot of Zoom calls as a team. Twice a week we did a lot of Zoom calls for maybe 8 or 9 weeks, worked on a lot of stuff, especially our own game. We worked a lot of things, and it was kind of when we got back to the field, we really hit the ground running. Then we had the work done through the Zoom calls, and it just took off from there. Our fitness levels were really good, and we knew we had to hit the ground running when we come back. Our group was seen as kind of the easier side of the draw, and we target those three games to get three wins, and we got that. And then in a one-off game in the semi-final, that can happen, and thankfully we got the result last Saturday evening.
Right, okay, so like, I mean, when you went back on your first night or the first couple of nights and you were put through fitness tests and stuff like that, you know, you were all flying it. I'm sure that gave you confidence.
Oh, absolutely. We knew we'd work done. Dermot Sheridan is our S&C coach from Cavan. He's a top guy. He was running weekly reports on our team, and, you know, anyone who wasn't buying into it was just gotten rid of. So there was no hiding places, really. With the Zoom calls, we were catching up on tactics and where we went wrong in previous campaigns, what hadn't gone right. So we really did work hard over the lockdown. And we said ourselves, whenever teams work hard the most over the lockdown, we'll come out the best. And you know, it's showing that we've worked hard and we're getting a reward now.
Yeah, you play a lovely style of football. Like, I mean, you must be proud of that. I know the game is kind of changing around, but John Mahan, you know, was it 2-3 years ago he came in at this stage? Well, the 2 full years, and he went, look, this is the way we play. And probably the first time everybody saw it was the game in Navan against Meath, where you nearly caught them, you know, playing a more direct style. Like, you're almost ahead of the game with that.
Yeah, well, our fitness levels are good, and we've good pace within our team. And that's why it was important we got up to the level where we needed to be when we started the league. But like down in Navan, we probably should have won that game 2 years ago. Like, even look back last November, we played Kildare. We should have beaten Kildare down Portlaoise in the championship just a couple of months ago. Now Kildare are a Division 1 team. So we knew we were kind of, teams around us were making progress and we weren't. And it was frustrating. We were kind of yo-yoing between 3 and 4 the last maybe 7-8 years. And we just knew as players we had to push on. John and his backroom team had an excellent team in place. The county board were behind us. So it was just up to the players really to kind of start buying into it. And in fairness, since January, it's been top class. I can't fault anyone. The effort that's been put in has been brilliant. And listen, as the saying goes, you reap what you sow. And we put in the effort and we're getting the results out, thank God.
Yeah, you definitely have. But he definitely does encourage kick passing and getting the ball down the other end of the field as quick as possible. And I suppose even tactically, Anton, when another team is pushing up in your kickouts and you're getting the ball up the field through the foot, the other team isn't able to retreat as fast as the ball. It's very logical, really, when you think about it.
Absolutely. And as you know, you're being taught from a young age just to get it and kick it as quick as you can and move the ball will do the work. And that's what we do. We don't hesitate on the ball. We just move it quickly through the hands. As I said, we pace our team. We get runners off the shoulder. And that's the only way you're going to beat these blanket defences, is pace, moving the ball quickly and getting lads running off the shoulder.
Yeah, exactly. John Mahan is speaking about your strength and depth. The obvious one is Niall McNamee, your club mate, coming off the bench. How is he taking this super sub role? Like, is he accepting it in team meetings and then going home in the car with you, giving out shite about it, or what's he like?
I actually don't really talk to him much about it because he's just in the zone. He's focused at the minute. He's embracing it well, in fairness to him. I know by him that he would love to be starting, obviously, sure. Any player who goes training wants to be on the team on that weekend. So, yeah. But listen, he's a great role model for everyone in there. He's doing fantastic work, especially with the younger lads. Whether it's be taking frees before training or having a word of the lads here after training, he's absolutely brilliant to have around. And you know, he's still producing the goods, 17 or 18 years on, and he's still doing the job for us. And hopefully he can continue to do that for us.
Yeah, he definitely will. So, like, I mean, you're on the go a long time too. My first memory of you wasn't a good one, Anton. You came on against us in 2008 in Tullamore and scored a screamer of a point. So, like, I mean, I've kind of had my eye out for you ever since that. But, like, I mean, you've played everywhere, really. You're kind of settled as a wing forward, a scoring wing forward now.
Yeah, well, I was thinking early on after Christmas, I was thinking where I want to go on this team, and there's a lot of talent up front for the full forward line. So I was thinking I'd best be clever now and maybe put my hand up for the wing and just keep out of the way, out of the good lads. So it's worked well for me out there so far. 5 games I've played out there now, so I'm doing well. It's a tough role. It's up and down the field. It's tough work. You get through a lot of running, but listen, I'm embracing it well. I'm enjoying it, chipping in with a few scores and helping the team, and that's what it's all about.
Well, I suppose that's a big thing though, like, I mean, because you can play the wing forward role and not be expected to score, but I'm sure John Mahan is saying, look, I want you chipping in for 2 or 3 points here.
Yeah, he does be saying that to me, and he puts a bit of pressure on me every game to get a few points. But like, wing forward is a tough position because at times you can kind of go in and out of a game. Maybe you mightn't get in the ball for 10, 15 minutes. It's tough. So I always try to get on the ball early as possible, get into the game, and then you'll find your feet. And if it's not going well for you, I always try to just tackle, work myself into the game and get going. But listen, thankfully, it's paying off for me. I'm enjoying the role out there. And getting good scores as well, thank God.
You mentioned Niall kind of being a good influence for some of the younger players. Like Killian Farrell's playing great stuff since he nailed down a place the last day. He's on the panel maybe a year or two. Where's Keane Johnson? Is he injured or has he gone off the panel?
Keane Johnson is injured at the minute, yeah. He's struggling with a bit of a groin injury the last since the club championship last summer. So he had to get an operation and he's still under a bit of pressure. He probably won't likely be kicked ball for Offaly this summer. I'd say his target would be for Ban maybe later on in the summer. So hopefully we'll get him right for Division 2 football next year.
Right, OK. But like, I mean, I suppose without having won anything at underage, you've had some decent underage teams coming through.
Yeah, we've had decent underage teams, but we never really pushed on when we got to senior level. That's why it was so important as a group this year. We really pushed on because, as I said earlier, we only went from 3 to 4, and you're kind of just going lower, and you're looking at teams around you like Laois, Westmeath, Kildare, and they're all making progress, and you're just staying idle in the between 3 and 4, and it was very frustrating. And as a group, we kind of just said we need to push on and take a bit of ownership. I think we've done that.
And was that the problem? Because I mean, you have mentioned, and Offaly wouldn't been that far away from Laois, Westmeath, especially in the last 4 or 5 years. But I mean, there was always something coming out of Offaly. Like right now, is the complete opposite. All you hear out of Offaly is good news, and the hurlers are going well, the footballers are going well, and all these things. But for a few years there seemed to be just one thing after another, and it seemed like a group of players that weren't taking ownership of it.
Well, I 100% agree with you. There was always noise coming out, whether it be players walking away from the panel, management walking away or not up to scratch, county board not buying into the process. And I think in the last 18 months since Michael Dyden has come in, it's been hugely positive. As a team, we want for nothing. We're very well looked after. We have an excellent backroom team, and that we need to help us improve or get over the line is given to us. So on that regard, I can't speak highly enough on the county board. And that Shane Lowry's on board now. He's after giving a great lift to the whole county as a whole in the last couple of weeks. And as you said, the hurlers are doing well as well. So on a positive, it's all good news for Offaly. But in the last couple of years, yeah, 100% agree with you. Lads not committing to the cause. And it's been tough, you kind of have to go, you've no choice, but you kind of have to just keep ploughing along. And sometimes I would have thought we would have never seen promotion Division 2, so I'm just so happy to get over the line last Saturday evening, because there's players there that maybe have given 10, 11, 12 years service to Offaly and have really got nothing out of it. So for them lads, I was really happy to see that happen.
Yeah, it was 2006 the last time Offaly were in Division 2, am I right in saying that, in the top 16?
You're right. Yeah, that's 100% right. Yeah. So I think actually Offaly lost the Leinster final that year to Dublin, and then actually Laois put them out in the round 4 of the qualifiers after, and it kind of just went downhill from there then.
Right, that was it. So Niall obviously has played at that level in the league.
That's all. Niall's the only one, yeah. So he's the only one on the panel, yeah.
Right, okay. So that is a big step. That is a big step, I suppose, to be playing against those teams.
Oh, absolutely. And even next year, I was looking at the list there Sunday morning, and you're going to be playing Meath, Cork, Galway, these teams coming to Tullamore, which will create a buzz in itself. And the only way we're going to progress and get better is playing better teams, So it'll make it a bit easier in November, December, when the call comes to pick up the bag and go back training,
Yeah. You mentioned Shane Lowry there. Since he's given the underage, obviously, money. Since he's given that money to Offaly, the Offaly hurlers and footballers have played 9 league games and won all 9. And the Laois hurlers and footballers have played 9 league games and lost all 9. So I don't know what to read into that.
I live in Pranach near beside Paddy Sullivan and Robbie Piggott, and in fairness they're great lads, but they're having it tough at the minute. But I actually recalled from the other day that I know how they're feeling, because I've been like that the last 7 or 8 years, but when you're not winning it's always tough, but when you're winning it, as I said, it's always easier to pick up the bag. But for a long time I've been struggling like they were, so I'm going to enjoy this these few weeks while I can.
Yeah, exactly. Here, have you had a chance to look at Derry? Like, I mean, you probably haven't, because you wouldn't have been focused at all on a final until last week, and now you've only got a little bit of time to start turning your attention to them.
Yeah, well, we'll do a bit of work in Derry. We're training tonight. We'll do a bit of work on them. We actually took Tuesday night off with a gym session. He gave it the night off just to freshen up and be back Thursday night fresh. So we'll do a bit of work in Derry tonight. Listen, the shackles are off to a certain extent. We're promoted now. We can go and enjoy the whole experience Saturday evening, play with a bit of freedom, see where it takes us. Just enjoy it, as I said. It's all about we're getting another game under our belt before we play Louds on the week down in Navan. So I'm sure that game will stand to us Saturday. But as I said, the shackles are off. Let's go and enjoy it and play with a bit of freedom and let's go after it.
Yeah, exactly. Just quickly before I let you go, you mentioned Loud. Like, had you one little eye on whether Loud would accept the Division 4 final and maybe do a double header? And when they didn't, were you like, interesting now?
To be honest, I didn't really care what Loud did. To be honest, we were just focused on ourselves. We haven't even looked at Loud at all yet. To be honest, so we are going to just take Saturday evening, as I said, enjoy it, go after it, and then Sunday morning we'll be in for a recovery session and we'll just focus on Loud then. But listen, I think it's the right decision to play the game Saturday evening. I think all Division 1, 2, 3, 4 finals should be all on. I don't see why any lad wouldn't want to play, represent his county for a trophy in Croke Park. And I'm sure if you ask 99% of county players, they will agree with what I'm saying. So, and as I said, Derry will relish the opportunity to play us in the league final Saturday evening as well. So listen, it's a pity if Croke Park won't be used Saturday and Sunday for league finals, but listen, we're happy to play our final.
Yeah, listen, it's fantastic that we have a final anyway. I'm in complete agreement with you as well. I would play all the finals as well, even the week before. It doesn't make any difference. Anton, I really appreciate you taking the call before the final. Thanks very much. I'll talk to you again.
Yeah, no bother, Colin. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Great stuff from Anton there. I'd say we're looking forward to a really good open game of football here, Conor. Like, I mean, I saw Rory Gallagher talking during the week, and he says it's the fine wee areas, like the opposition kickouts, like being in clinical up front. That's the difference between us and the top teams in the country. And like, I mean, this is always the question with Division 3 teams coming up to Division 2. Are they clinical, or do they have the quality at that level? We know Offaly have some good forwards. Derry probably have Shane McGuigan and might be struggling for scoring forwards outside of that.
Yeah, well, they have, from what I've seen, I've only seen bits and pieces of Derry so far, Willie's, that they haven't been struggling that much to get score. Maybe not in the forward line necessarily, but kind of, you know, like in general, they've been quite high scoring. Like, I know they put 5-13 up against Fermanagh, I think. So, and a lot of it based on like a kind of hard running style and getting runners from deep, like the Dohertys or maybe, you know, Niall O'Loughlin come from deep and stuff like that and being able to tack them on. So, like, obviously, like if you're Offaly, who've been quite actually decent in defence from what I've seen as well, you're obviously Shane McGuigan is your biggest target and then kind of work from there. But I don't know, just talking about that kind of quality as well, that's the danger, like that you're basing these teams based on what you've seen, but they're playing against teams of their level. Whereas just like from what I've seen, like I would have watched all Mayo games, for example, and there's a definite noticeable drop in quality between what they've been used to in Division 1 and Division 2. But in terms of teams with kind of, you know, that have really kind of lit up the league so far and with kind of with the right philosophy so far, you're talking about two good ones in Derry and Offaly. So fingers crossed we get the open game we're hoping for on Saturday.
Yeah, I think we will. We'll do a review show on this on Monday. We're going to watch this on Saturday evening. So we'll definitely be doing a show on Monday and give the Division 3 final the respect that it deserves. More bad news here, Conor, and that's Paul Cribben is out for the championship. He's a broken foot, broken tibia or whatever bone is inside in the foot. Jimmy Hyland, Daniel Flynn and Kevin Feely are out with hamstring injuries. So Kildare are in big trouble with this now. And then I was reading Jack O'Connor's only started 19 different players and he's only used 24 over the four games. Now, does that seem wise to you? Like, I mean, I understand Kildare, Jack O'Connor's probably under a little bit of pressure. They had a disastrous championship last year, a collapse against Mead. And I'm sure he was under a little bit of pressure to come back strong. And that's why he's picked his strongest team and he's pretty much stuck to that. Now, the league is pretty much a warm-up competition for a lot of teams and they're rotating. But Jesus, they're like three. Kevin Feely, Daniel Flynn, Jimmy Hyland, like they're three of your best players. Like you could argue that on different lines of the field are your three best players. And I'm not going to call Paul Cribben anything to do with Jack O'Connor's fault. That's a broken foot. That's fine. But that's very, very unusual to only go with 19 starters across the four games.
Yeah, it is. Like I can understand it to a certain degree, Wally, because I'd say if you, when you talk about kind of, when you know a team is settled in its own skin, for example, that like you could, you can look at a Kildare team and you can name, you know, ahead of a game that they're going to play at the weekend, you can probably name 13 or 14 out of 15 starters that are going to play. And Kildare have been quite flaky. Like their exit from the championship last year was probably embarrassing for them. So Jack O'Connor is probably thinking, I need some consistency here and I need to nail down a starting 15 for the championship. And to do that, I want to keep them playing as much as possible together during the league. But that said, I mean, you're talking about the circumstances of this year. You know, you're talking about players not having played games in how many months and coming back to a schedule, you know, without a proper pre-season where, you know, soft tissue injuries and hamstring injuries particularly are prevalent throughout the country. And the fact then that you're allowed to use, what, 7 subs, isn't it, during games, during the league. At 19 players over 4 games, what's that, a maximum of 4 changes to the starting lineup and then just using 24. So listen, it's easy for us maybe to say in hindsight, especially when they've lost those players and especially the players they've lost. You know, they're really, really important to the team. But when you look back at it like that.
Yeah, I don't need hindsight to tell me that with 4 games in 5 weeks, with only a 3-week lead in, that you might want to, you know, move your players around.
That's true. No, that's true. What I say in hindsight is that the players they lost specifically, do you know what I mean? Whether you're talking about Jimmy Hyland, Daniel Flynn and Kevin Feely, like Jack O'Connor, well, he could have obviously accounted for that by maybe kind of experimenting a little more, but he would have seen them as crucial to the team. So maybe thought he had to play them all the time. So yeah, as I said, when you look at it like that, when you look at it from an overall perspective, use the starting 19 players in this like league campaign, especially when you compare it to some of the other teams and how many players they've been able to use, it does seem maybe a little bit ill-advised.
Yeah, Cork's Cathal O'Mahony is out. He's gone for 10 weeks with a hamstring injury. Grade 3 hamstring tear. He'd been in good form. He kicked 5 against... he came on against Clare and kicked 5 points as a sub, and he'd scored 3 points inside the opening 6 minutes in the last game against Westmeath, and then destroyed his hamstring. And the reason I have this on the Cathal O'Mahony is not a guaranteed starter for Cork, but he'd been playing very well, is 2003, Connor, the worst injury I ever got was a grade 3 10-week hamstring tear. And oh my God, I'll tell you a quick little story about this shambolic episode. I'd been in good form during the league. I might have told this story on the show before, but I've been good form during the league. We made the league final, first championship game against Wexford. I was playing wing forward in the first half, was only all right, was moved into full forward in the second half. And this fella, full back, real awkward sort of an individual, and he was all over me. And but I ended up turning him and he jumped up my back, and the way I fell was in, you know, like, you know, the generic hamstring stretch as you put one leg out in front of you and stretch down. So he jumped on top of me like that, and I felt a pain. The pain I felt was that I had a cramp in my hamstring and the cramp would not go away. So when the person who I wouldn't even call the person a physio, I don't think she was a qualified physio, but she would have been on our backroom team at the time, she came running, and the only way I could describe to her what was wrong with me is that I have a cramp in my hamstring and it won't go away. So I was trying to stretch it to see what would come out.
Oh, yeah.
The agony of it, right? So then we came off the field. I had to go off the field anyway. And again, the cramp, the feeling of the cramp wouldn't go away. It wouldn't subside no matter what I did. So she did a couple of strength tests on it, and I actually had a little bit of strength at the very top of my hamstring, but that's the only thing she tested. Like if you came down even 2 or 3 inches, my leg just fell to the ground because, you know, there was no power, but at the very top there was a bit of strength. So she tested that anyways, and she decided that this was a cramp in my hamstring, and she got the masseuse to give it a good hard rub. So I'm in the Croke Park in the hotel and I'm getting feckin', you know, rightly rubbed out of this cramp out of my hamstring, and in the meantime my hamstring is in tatters, right? So I'm in agony on the bench. The cramp feeling still hasn't gone. So we're in having the dinner then afterwards and I'm still in a cramp, and I'm saying, when's this cramp going, like, you know, at what point is this cramp going to go away? And keeping up the pretense that it was a cramp anyways, and the match was on the Sunday. I got to training, I think it was on the Tuesday night, and I'd seen nobody in the meantime. And by the time I got into training on Tuesday night, I'd seen the back of my leg it was completely black. Now, I mean from the bottom of my bum down to the back of my knee and even down into my calf, it had bled down into it. And I was like, Christ almighty, I'm not stupid to know that this hamstring has been absolutely mangled. So I got the training anyway. I'll cut this story a little bit short anyway. So the team doctor that was there, I got up onto the bench anyways, and the same woman was there, and she stuck with she wasn't for turning now on this cramp thing. So she do you know what she said? Where the blood? I says, where's all the blood come from? Why am I bruised? Oh, well, that's a burst blood vessel, I would say, she says, right? And I, what's going on here? So she got the doctor in, and now the doctor was a GP. He wouldn't have a notion really about injuries or whatever. So he was poking my leg with his finger or whatever, and he kind of went along with her with the cramp and the burst blood vessel. And I turned around to them, and like, I knew my season was over at this stage. I had enough injuries to know. I said, do you know what the two of you are? Two absolute idiots. You haven't a clue. And I let them have it. And the next minute, the doctor went running out of the dressing room, and I got off the plinth anyways and went to have a look out. Here he is squealing to Mikko outside in training about what I was after saying. So, like, I mean, what a horrific experience. So that Cathal O'Mahony's grade 3 10-week hamstring, it was 10 weeks. I got back for the Leinster final. I came on as a sub at halftime, but sure, I wasn't right at all. Isn't that some horrific? I hope backroom teams are a little bit more professional now.
I'd imagine so. I'm stretching my leg out here, Willie, while I'm listening to the story. can I ask, when was it determined then that you actually had a grade 3 hamstring tear?
I went
3 days later.
No, I tell you what I did. I went to Mihála Murahurtig's son. I can't think of his first name. He's a physio in Maynooth. And I went there, and he says, Jesus, Colm, that's a terrible job. And he did an MRI on it. And it came back that it was my hamstring was ripped in three different places. There was blood all over it. It was in a mangled state. And I told him to send that MRI scan down to the doctor's office and to send it to that other woman. And I heard no more back from either of the two of them about that. It was like it was just brushed, you know. And you know, as it turned out, I was the bad one for having lost my patience with them in the dressing room.
And were you good to go then after the 10 weeks? Or was it still
I was,
right?
But it was a long road back. It was a long road back. And look, I wasn't the same player at all when I came back. Anyways, we'll move on from that because I could start crying here, missing out on that whole Leash's greatest year of all time. And I'm like I'm sitting on the bench with a 10-week hamstring job. I want to move on to this because we mentioned on Monday's show that myself and Brendan Devaney had a bit of an argument on Saturday night about Dublin's style of play. So Brendan sent me a WhatsApp message. He wouldn't allow me play it on the phone. he refused permission to play it on the show. But we want to see if he is as brave as he was Saturday night now. So he joins us on the line. How's it going, Brendan?
I'm all talk, no action, Willie. had a couple of beers with me at that stage, and we were having a rant. So you know, it settles a wee bit since then, so I'm glad you didn't put them up.
Right, so give me your argument there, so minus the expletives.
Well, you talk about football, about winning teams, and the best team that probably ever played the game, right? They're playing a weakened Donegal team who really really are looking at the Ulster Championship, and Dublin are 7 points up, and the full 15 fall inside the 45 now. I despise blanket defence, right? And you can say Donegal played it, that's all right. I was in charge of Donegal. I played for them, I was a Donegal man. I hate blanket defence, right? So if I'm looking at the talent that Dublin have on that pitch and the ease in which at times they're exposing Donegal, why do they revert into this shell of a tactical formation? I just can't get my head around that. And that's what me and you were discussing, and you were putting up your point on the thing.
Yeah, well, I suppose my point is, like, I mean, they're playing a team that's doing the same thing. So Dublin's kind of view on that is, we'll beat you at whatever game you want to come at us with. So if you want to start doing that kind of thing, we'll do it on the other side. We're much better at that game than you. And we're winning All-Ireland 6 in a row by doing this. Where's their motivation to change that?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. There's a bigger picture out there, and people are so quick to look to that. Of course, the 6 All-Irelands, as you mentioned, the best team that ever played the game, etc., etc. You look at the best teams that play the best sports around the world. Do you think if the All Blacks were playing Ireland in a World Cup, they'd say, do you know what, Ireland, you're playing this formation, we're going to copy you? No, they wouldn't. They would go out and pick them apart. So would the likes of a Man City when they're playing, say, a Crystal Palace. They don't go, do you know what, you're going to put 10 behind the ball inside your 38, we're going to do the same. No, they don't. So why does the best team in the country, by a long way, revert into their tactics? That's just what I was saying, Willie. Surely it's on to them to go and express themselves as footballers, go and open up. They actually took Donegal apart, rather than sitting on a massive lead and almost sitting in their shell. I never get my head around that, Willie. But then I like the expressive side of games. I like teams going and stamping their authority on it. Why would Dublin morph into a tactic of a Donegal team that was just in there to protect themselves and try and get something out of the game? That's where I see it, Willie. And there's a bigger picture in sport in terms of how it's played and us, you know, I suppose, promoting the whole skills of the game and that. And you're not seeing that, Willie, when you've got your whole team stuck inside the 45. That always does my head in.
Yeah. Now, you have to be fair. They were 115 to 10 points up. The game was over. You know, that's, I don't think them being inside the 45 is a true reflection of the entire game. They wouldn't have been playing those tactics the entire game. This was more or less when the game was practically over.
No, Willie. They were dropping in the whole game. There was different areas, patches of that game. And in fact, Donegal, in fairness to them, seemed to leave at times, at least left one up. Archie Gallon was left up inside at times. Now, listen, I'm not defending Donegal, everybody. I wouldn't be happy with that. But you'll see a very different Donegal team when they have a full team back, and particularly if Michael Murphy orchestrating it come the championship. It'll be a very, if Donegal were lucky enough, should that happen, it's probably unlikely the path that they have, Willie. But should they get to play Dublin again this year, I think they'd play a different type of game. So this thing, if you've got players like, listen, look at the forward line, you know, Conor Killen, Scully, Basquiel, Kilkenny, Costello. Why are players like that inside their 45? There should be a platform inside of attack, Willie. There should be kick passing up the pitch. Nobody's asking anybody to be naive. Sure, drop in your sweepers, players have to drop back. At least leave a platform of attack inside, which then opens up the game. That's what I can't understand why teams wouldn't do that, particularly when they're as talented as Dublin.
I think you're right. But I definitely think over the six All-Irelands, Dublin have become more and more conservative and more mechanical, and that, you know, a lot of the risk has been taken out of the game. You never see a spectacular point from them. You very rarely see them giving the ball away. You know, they're almost too patient at times. But at the same time, like I said, this is winning All-Irelands. And another thing, because they're so conservative, they do drop some forwards back, but their forwards are directly watching their direct opponents. And a big part of defensive systems that Donegal played, and I was disappointed with how Donegal approached the game, but Dublin are getting their full forward line and half forward line to turn and face their men and to start almost walking backwards, but with them in mind, because they know through experience that a huge part of Donegal's game plan is to start attacking from everywhere on the field.
Yeah. Listen, Molly, I can get that, right? But at the end of the day, give me any 15, half-decent footballers in the country, and I'll put them back inside the 45 and create a defensive shape. What has happened to defenders being able to hold their own corner, hold their own court? And if Donegal, if any team leaves players up the pitch, the defenders can't come all the way back with them. Well, you can't take that chance. You can't leave Conor Gillan round about Donegal's 40 and whoever's marking him leaves him to take a hand pass. The player leaving him is no danger, because then Dublin have 14 players inside the 45. Conor Gillan's standing on his own. Well, he has to be marked. So I just don't get this thing of teams mirroring teams. I was just a bit disappointed in that. You were a bit disappointed in us. So we were all disappointed.
And we talk about that on the show a lot. Like, I mean, why does Con worry about his man? Why does he just let him off and pawn him off? But Dublin's tactics are very clear, and it was the same with Jim Gavin, is every man has a man and you're responsible for him. And we've talked about it on the show a lot of times. Is that the right approach or is it not? You would see David Clifford, we've seen him in league games where he might run to the 45 with his man and then he'll pawn him off and stay up. And some other defender will have to drop back on him. But Dublin don't usually do that pawn off thing. You know, they say you're responsible for your man and you don't want him breaking up the field. And if you're not standing goal side of him and drifting back, suddenly the fullback has a jump on you. He's gone up the field, you know, and the spotlight is on you for allowing him to do that.
Yeah, but well, that's more or less saying that there'll never be a turnover, and that the player that's marking them, from a Dublin's respect, and I'm just on about that period that me talked to you in the second half, they're dropping way off their man in their defensive shape. So they're not even exactly picking up their man. And that's opposite of it. And this, Willie, for me, is born out of the top teams influence the tactics of the other teams, not vice versa, right? So if you this happens in club football in Donegal all the time, where the top teams play ultra defensive still at times, and they force everybody else into doing it. I think there's probably a balance in here between tactics, Willie. But if we get so robotic around it, you're saying everybody's got this job, then football, sport isn't sport. It's a job. It's a workmanlike thing where everything's about result. And then what that does, really, it slowly kills the game. And nobody really talks about that because it's kind of like, oh, good luck to them. They had to do this, they had to do that. No, they don't. You have to go at times and try and play the game and enforce yourself on the opposition. And that's why I thought last night, as we spoke about, that it was Donegal's tactic to Dublin seemed to mirror. If I was a Dublin player now, if I was in that forward line, for example, with that talent there, I'd be like, hey, leave me up inside, leave two or three, leave a platform. Let's just kick past the ball. Let's run Donegal ragged. That's why I would have played it. And maybe then you wouldn't have won your six All-Irelands with me in charge, but that's the difference.
Well, that's the thing. But I do remember Tyrone going to Breffni Park to play Donegal, and Tyrone were this great kicking team this year. They'd beaten Dublin in Croke Park, and they had McShane up in the forwards, and they're playing a lovely style of football. And Donegal stuck in two sweepers in front of him. Tyrone continued to kick it, and Donegal caught them on the counter, and everybody. The analysis then was how stupid were Tyrone. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I mean, Dublin will never be called that again. They got burned in 2014, and now against the Ulster teams, they do play a much more conservative game than they would, for example, against Donegal or Kerry. Like, you can see the difference between how they would approach a game against Donegal and a game against Kerry. Like, they play a lot more football, a lot less players dropping back, and a lot less worried, because maybe Jason Foley and Tadhg Morley aren't known for taking off up the field, and you'll see a little bit more traditional shape. I think Dublin take a lot of pleasure in beating the more defensive teams at their own game. I think they really enjoy it.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't if I was in, Molly, and I don't think like that. If you're going back to 2014, Molly, you know, that was 6 years ago. Look what's happened in between games, and look what happened before that. And Dublin were just all out attack then. And I said to you before, nobody's been stupid here and playing down anybody else's game by being tactically inept. But if you're only putting on a couple of sweepers, that's fine, dropping players back. Not your full team, Molly. Once you do that, Molly, to me, that is so disrespectful to the talent that you have out there and the ability of that team to play, because you're just killing the game. I mean, well, if you go to any game, a club team or an underage team or that, and God forbid it's happened in underage many a time, and you see the whole team dropping inside of 45, I'm just like, oh, come on. So I'm looking at this Dublin. I was excited about seeing Dublin because I don't see them in the flesh that often, because I'm mostly at Ulster games. I was really excited about seeing them. And in that second half, when you're still looking for bits and pieces of skill, to see them dropping in, really, is what sparked this in me. And that's, you know, maybe we'll see different things come championship, but I just thought this might have been their last half-decent workout, you know, for a few weeks, because they obviously have a much different pass that Donegal have coming up.
Yeah, I do think Dublin do get more of a free pass on dropping players back than other teams, for example. They do. So basically, are you decided now that you're in agreement with Jim McGuinness, and do you need to give him a call to apologise for what you said last week's show?
You're right. I'm no advocate. I'll bottle it up. He never answers the phone. I'll phone him a few times. If he doesn't answer, when I see him again, I'll say, sorry, I tried to call you. We're obviously busy.
Come here.
He's busy on talks with Jim McDubbin there to get this Dundalk thing sorted, will he?
Come here, I'll let you go, Brendan. Thanks very much for that.
Right, dude. Good luck.
All right, great stuff from Brendan there. Look, Conor, we don't have time to get into that anymore. I think myself and Brendan have gone on about it probably enough, because we have a bit of a championship preview and predictions to do, and that's next. All right, so we'll do a little bit of a championship preview. We won't have time next Thursday because of the matches at the weekend. We'll do it on the hurling show next Thursday. So we want to start with Ulster. And, like, I mean, it probably is the most interesting province, Ulster and Connacht, really, as we know, Conor. And, like, here's the thing for me in Ulster. Donegal are the best team in Ulster. But Donegal are riddled with injuries at the moment. Donegal are in the preliminary round next week. If they beat Down, who are a solid defensive team, that'll be a struggle. They play high-flying Derry, who were probably slight favourites to beat Offaly at the weekend. If they beat them, they have to get through Tyrone or Cavan, probably Tyrone. And if they beat them, you know, they have to win an Ulster final. There is one week break, so they'll have four Ulster Championship games in 5 weeks. That's on the back of four league games in 5 weeks with only one weekend free in the middle of that, Connor. Like, you're looking at 8 weeks. 8 weeks of really tough going in maybe 10 weeks. Like, for that reason, I'm nearly going to tip against Donegal for the Ulster title.
Yeah, yeah. When you put it like that, Willie, yeah, that's not a bad point, especially if they, so they've lost Michael Murphy. He should be back, you'd imagine, for various stages of the championship. But if they were to lose, another big player because of the schedule that they have facing them, and judging from what we're hearing around the country with the various kind of counties affected by players being out with hamstrings and stuff, that could well happen to them. I do agree with you, Willie, that they're the best team in Ulster, with a caveat in that, like say last year being the prime example that, like, you know, Donegal, because of their form kind of leading up to the Ulster final, were being tipped as the team to challenge Dublin. I would have heard that the year before they got knocked out to Mayo in the Super 8. So, you know, like, Donegal for me for the last couple of years have been talked up a lot, and they haven't really kind of, you know, in the biggest game, they've obviously shown glimpses, but haven't really delivered the goods. But when I look at Ulster, when I look at their kind of path this year, granted as tough as it is, and when I look at who they're going to meet, I still, they are the best team in Ulster. And despite the toughness of the schedule, I still think they'll go all the way, because the one team I would back to beat them maybe is Tyrone, and we might get to Tyrone. But to me, Tyrone have been too Jekyll and Hyde so far in what they've done in the league, particularly in that game against Kerry at the weekend. And maybe they weren't kind of, you know, going all out for that because the Ulster Championship is in their way. But like, to me, yeah, Donegal are that bit ahead of the rest of them, that despite the toughness of their schedule, I still think that they'll come out on top in the end, just about.
The Ulster finals actually is 2 weeks after the semi-final, so they'd have one more week there, you know, which is something. Yeah. So they play Down on the 27th of June, then they will play on the 11th of July, so they have 2 weeks between that. Then the following week is the semi-final. That's when, because you say Michael Murphy is back from a hamstring injury. We know what hamstring injuries are like. Daniel Flynn came back from a hamstring injury, and now he's gone with another hamstring injury, because, like, I mean, when it's such a difficult schedule, like, hamstring injuries are so demoralising. Like, I mean, you know, you have to build them back up. You have to gradually get them back strong enough to be at championship level. Then you play a championship match. Another championship match on a just recovered hamstring. Do you get me? Like, I mean, it's a really horrible, any team that's with players struggling with hamstring injuries coming into a schedule, the Donegal schedule is 1, 2, 3, it would be 4 games in 6 weeks for Donegal, which is probably a little bit, I'm going to tip against Donegal in Ulster. I think that they'll be walking wounded by the time they come to Tyrone. And I think they'll get over, they'll just scrape over Tyrone. But I think Armagh will beat them in the Ulster final. How about that? I don't know how I'm tipping Armagh after jumping off their bandwagon last year, but something like that might happen.
Did you jump off their bandwagon last year?
Yeah, I did, maybe after
the Donegal game, to be honest. Because for years, Willie, you had been tipping Armagh, you know, and rightly so given the talent in the county. But I just talked about Donegal flatter and deceive there, and like Armagh to another level altogether have flattered to deceive, especially in the Ulster Championship. Now this year, I have to say the bits and pieces I've seen of Armagh, I have been really impressed. And because it's just basically the talent that we know that they have there is flourishing. Do you know what I mean? Especially like some of the players in their forward line are really starting to come to fruition. But maybe because of the schedule only, you know, that it's not as tough as Donegal's is, even though, like, likely meeting Monaghan in the semis would be a bit tough. But
yeah, they have a good record against Monaghan. Like,
they do. No, in fairness, but if you're telling me a one off game now, Donegal versus Armagh, I'm tipping Donegal all day. But maybe if it comes to fruition, as you think, that Donegal will be walking wounded, I would give Armagh a chance. But I'm taking all those scenarios into account. Meeting Tyrone in the semi-finals, potentially meeting Armagh in the final, I'm still giving Donegal a hesitant nod because, as I said, I think they have flattered to deceive, but I still think they are that bit better and that bit further along than other teams in Ulster.
Yeah, okay, right. So you're going Donegal, I'm going to go Armagh. Connacht, then, like I've mentioned earlier in the show, Connor, like, I mean, Killian Connor's out. Dermot O'Connor is, you know, we don't know what his injury is. He kind of went up for a ball in midfield. But even just Killian O'Connor, because the knock-on effect now is Aidan O'Shea is probably going to have to go in to the full forward line. You know, even if Aidan O'Shea went in there, I like Ryan O'Donoghue at number 11. I don't like him at corner forward at all. I think after his performance in the All-Ireland final, he deserves to nail down that 11 position last year, especially in the first half, rather than be moved position. But he's going to have to stay in there now, and potentially Aidan O'Shea is going to have to go in there. And now Aidan O'Shea has gone out of midfield and Dermot O'Connor has gone out of midfield. You know, so you're losing the big men. It really is a bit of a disaster for Mayo. Also, the bad news for Mayo is that Galway got that hammering down in Kerry, because Galway have gone very defensive now. They're dropping bodies behind the ball. They're a wounded animal. Mayo and Galway is going to be a battle anyways. Galway have gotten the better of Mayo in those kind of arm wrestle, get in your face, defensive games. And Galway went a little bit more defensive in the Connacht final last year. I think they'll go even more this year, because I think Pádraig Joyce has just gone, look, listen, this isn't working. And he's gone maybe back a little bit. I'm going to go completely left field here. Imagine going Armagh and Galway in Ulster and Connacht. I don't know what I'm smoking today.
Well, I don't think Galway and Connacht is as much of a stretch as Armagh in Ulster, to be honest. Like I had Mayo all day for Connacht, to be honest, until the news about Killian. I think it's that big of a blow, because as you said, it doesn't just impact. We're not just losing one player, we're losing the complete shape of the Mayo attack, basically. And I had thought that because Dermot O'Connor and Matty Uruan were kind of forming a very settled midfield partnership there, that you could probably afford to put Aidan O'Shea at 11. And the reason I said Aidan O'Shea at 11, because Mayo hadn't decided on an 11, basically, in the league so far. But now that's thrown completely up in the air. Like, whether Ryan O'Donoghue, who I agree with you, is better at 11, I think he's far easily marked inside than he is outside. And I think he's a real heads-up footballer that kind of looks to play a kind of perceptive pass inside, and I think it suits him there. So that's completely thrown up in the air. And then we're losing our free taker, and we're coming in, like, I thought Mayo, granted, they were 11 points up in cruise, and then Mayo have a habit of doing this anyway, but look completely shapeless in attack on Sunday against Clare when Killian went off. So I'm far less confident. I still think Mayo will get to a final, and I think Galway will get to the final on the other side, and they'll give them a game. But there's a couple of things there that you mentioned. Yeah, Galway did go back defensive for the Connacht final last year, but that was off the back of, what, two games? Do you know, like, they got hammered by Mayo, decided to go back a bit defensive, and then they were playing Mayo in a Connacht final. So they didn't have as much time to work on it. They've played a couple of league games again. They played Dublin, Roscommon and Monaghan in that defensive style. They played good teams in that defensive style since they lost to Kerry. It'll be more finely tuned by the time they play Galway. And as you're right, like, Mayo only got over the line by a point last year. It'll be a more battle-hardened Galway. So the more I think of it, unfortunately, the more I'm kind of fancying Galway to get over Connacht. Because one thing we haven't mentioned here is Roscommon, Willie. Like, they didn't have a great league. They're never to be discounted, you know, given what they've done the last few years. But I do think Galway is too strong. So while I'd like to give a hesitant vote to Mayo, the more I talk about it, the more I'm talking into giving Connacht for Galway, to be honest.
Wow, Galway tip from Connor. This is incredible stuff. Like, I mean, this is a tribute to Killian O'Connor, really. Like, I mean, there's no other way to look at that. So we're both on Galway in Connacht. I'm Armagh, you're Donegal in Ulster. We're both Dublin and Leinster. We're not going to waste our time here. We're both Kerry and Munster. Like, let's not waste our time either. Like, if you're Cork, you're conceding 25 points at home to Westmeath. You don't want to be playing a Kerry team who's out for revenge in a Munster final.
Yeah, and just all the elements kind of add up, Willie, in terms of Kerry if they haven't learned their lesson after the way they played Cork last year, and the league, just the way they're firing in the league, and the scoring totals, they suggest rightly that that's going to be the way they're going to play. They'll be playing Cork at the height of summer as opposed to in winter. You'd imagine that'll be, you know, that'll be only two, you know, the conditions that are going to suit Clifford's and the Guineas and these type of lads that are firing all cylinders. So, like, I cannot, yeah, it's impossible to look past Kerry win in Munster. And to be honest, I know it's a bit away yet, but I think very comfortable win in Munster for Kerry.
Yeah, I think we'll both agree on that. So then the All-Ireland semi-finals, we have Munster against Ulster and we have Connacht against Leinster. So we're both, based off what we're going with, we have All-Ireland semi-final. I'm going to have Armagh versus Kerry, and there's only one winner there. I think Kerry will handle him. Even if his Donegal comes true, like, I mean, that's probably still, you know, a little bit too much for Donegal. Again, you know, they'll have played the Ulster final 2 weeks before, be 2 weeks after. You know, I'm still thinking, am I overplaying this Donegal schedule?
No, well, maybe a little bit. I hadn't really considered when you talked about the number of games. I mean, that's the kind of the path that all Ulster teams fear, is getting a tough game in the preliminary round and then having consistently tough games until the final, which Donegal have. And compare, like, if you compare their schedule to Kerry, it's going to be night and day. Do you know what I mean? But I'm just thinking, Willie, like, when I look at these two, they played an unbelievable game in the Super 8s, was it in 2019? And yeah, if I look from where they've come since then, I just think Kerry have evolved to a Donegal were very good back then. If they don't have Murphy backfiring all cylinders, I think they're not as good a team as they were at the height of the summer in 2019. Whereas I think Kerry have evolved to another level altogether. If that's a semi-final, I think it's going to materialise, and I think it is. I think Kerry will be too strong for them.
Yeah, so Kerry have Clare and Killarney, they'll hammer them. Then they have Tipperary in Thurles. They'll give them a good beating too. And then they have Cork. You know, a nice three games in the space of five weeks. Do you know what I mean? It's a much nicer way. And then for the All-Ireland semi-final is the 1st of August. That's a week later, I suppose. Anyways, I think to cut a long story short, are anybody going to make a case outside of Kerry beating the Ulster champions and Dublin beating the Connacht champions?
No, I don't think so. I mean, like, I had Dublin v Mayo question mark here, and I've changed my mind during the course of this conversation to Dublin Galway. But, like, the two of them are, you know, we've seen Mayo put it up to Dublin, you know, in the last couple of years. Last year, you know, put it up to them, but there was a clear gulf in class by the end. And I think, like, I think even the Galway are possibly even less suited to play against Dublin the way they're kind of set, the way they look that they're going to set up under Pádraig Joyce. So, like, the way I like Kerry Donegal on paper to me seems like a brilliant game and could potentially be a brilliant game. But to me, I think Dublin will be fairly comfortable whatever happens on the other side of the draw. It pains me to say it, but I do think that way. And so, shock horror, the Kerry Dublin final that nobody would have predicted is going to materialise.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it. Who's going to win the final? I'm going to go with Kerry. I think, you know, their time has to come. Like, these are some of exceptional young players, and they almost did it in 2019. They're two more years now. Sean O'Shea and David Clifford are in their fourth year of intercounty football. You're comfortable at that stage. You're at the point where now you're pushing it on, and you're being one of the, you know, the talkers in the dressing room, and it's your team now. And I think, you know, it can't just keep going on with them not getting that All-Ireland final. I think they're playing scintillating football. I think they're playing with six forwards that can all score. And I think it'd be a very attacking game. And I think that it's Kerry can potentially do it this year. And maybe if Dublin are beaten, like myself and Brendan were talking about, that potentially we could see Dublin being a little bit more, you know, play with a little bit more abandon and a little bit more flair next year.
Yeah, no, potentially. Like, I actually thought you'd go for Kerry, Willie. I can kind of see that the growth that you're developing through the shows the last few weeks. But to me, like, you said that their time has to come. Like, to me, I don't see why their time can't come if it doesn't come this year, if it can't come in the next few years. I mean, like, I think that we could be potentially looking at a few years worth of, I think, like, Dublin, Kerry is going to be the rivalry for the 20s, basically. I think that we could be looking at a few years of Dublin versus Kerry. So I think if they don't do it this year, I'm not necessarily ruling out the fact that they'll do it in the next couple of years, and I think they will eventually. I just still have Dublin, Kerry, Willie. I just think that, yeah, they haven't necessarily been firing all cylinders maybe in the league. I don't think they were last year, and then they started to blow teams out of the water come the championship. I still think that they're brilliant players, they're still at their top level, they're still at their peak. And while I think that Kerry are obviously best equipped to kind of put it up to them, and I think that, you, given the form that their forwards are in, I would love to see that kind of open shootout in the final. But I just think that I'm not ready to say that Dublin aren't going to win the All-Ireland yet. I think it'll be very close. as close as it was in 2019. But I just think that I'm still back in Dublin to get over the line in the end.
Right. Okay. Well, that's fair enough. Like, I mean, you'll be doing well now walking up the town in Kilshima after predicting a relegated Galway team in disarray to win the Connacht title. So listen, at the end of the day, that's okay. You might get Dublin right, but listen, at least I can show my face up the town in Portlaoise.
That's true. You've never been afraid of showing your face if you had a contrary opinion anyway, Willie. So,
Connor, thanks very much. Listen, we'll be back on Monday as usual, and we'll review the Division 3 final and whatever other stories are floating around as well. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "I Caffrey, you Free State bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."